Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
Our show today, it's Monday, the start of another week of trying to guess what are they going to do to us now. And it just does seem to get worse and worse. Before we get into things here today, though, real quick, I discovered over the weekend, quite by accident, that the podcasts from this show, the GCN What Really Happened show, the podcasts can be accessed through iTunes. So for those of you who have iPhones and so forth and so on, and the iPod, the one that looks like the iPhone without the phone, the touch. You can actually access the podcasts of this show through iTunes for free, and you can take a listen to the shows that way if you are so inclined. Now then, obviously, getting back to the news on the economy, as you heard on the news break, the Dow dropped, ended about 254 points down. That's a pretty sizable loss given the total volume of the market right now. It was actually down lower than that, a little bit of a rebound toward the end. Could be a dead cat bounce. I think that magic surge that we saw a couple of, first part of last week, I think that's pretty much over. The trend is definitely downward again. The big reason for the losses, of course, the auto companies have failed to come up with a restructuring plan that anybody believes can turn them around and return them to profits. And so further bailouts have been basically put on hold. And industry insiders are screaming it's the end of Chrysler and it's the end of General Motors, and it's going on and on and on. And folks, back when the first auto bailouts went through, all those months ago, I made a prediction right here at whatreallyhappened.com. I said the auto companies are not going to be able to pull themselves out. And all of this bailout money, it was being described as a loan by the government to take the sting out of it. And I predicted that the auto companies were not going to come up with a restructuring plan that was going to work. They were not going to be able to repay their loans to the Federal Reserve. And that ultimately, you and I and the rest of the American taxpayers, once more, we get stuck with the bill. And that is exactly what is coming to pass. We're getting stuck with the bills. Over, no matter what the government does, we the people will pay for it. Even when we tell the government, no, don't do this, it is wrong, it will fail, and the government does it anyway, they still turn around and stick us with the cost of it. And I am sure that I am hardly alone in feeling that we have come back to this whole idea of taxation without representation. We pay some of the highest taxes in the world. Yes, there are other nations whose taxes are almost as high as those here in the U.S., but there you get free education, you get free medical care, you get decent roads, decent bridges, decent schools, decent hospitals, the places being taken care of. Here in the United States, for all that money that we keep pouring into the government, we get bombs and more tax forms. That's what we get. We're not getting a whole heck of anything else. And you just go up there to Fargo right now. They're bailing out from under their floods here. The reason the floods got to be as bad as they did, the levees cracked and leaked. The levees, once again, same thing we saw in the aftermath of Katrina, same thing we saw in the later floods up in the northern part of the Mississippi. The maintenance on the civilian infrastructure has been deferred to pay for the war, to pay for the war, to pay for the war, and, of course, to send more money to Israel and various other countries whose leaders we are attempting to bribe to remain within the American sphere of influence. And so, folks, it's a scam. You are being scammed. And I wanted to mention real quick, for those of you who are not old enough to remember, if you've ever heard this song, The Ballad of John Henry, you know, when John Henry was a little baby, sitting on his daddy's knee, so forth and so on. And they talk about, at the very end, I owe my soul to the company store. Now, that is a reference to something that was called the company town. This was a very, very common means of American corporations doing business back at a time when a lot of business was still being done in very remote locations, whether it was mining or building the railroads, building dams, all kinds of things. And how it would work is the corporations would come to major population centers and they'd offer these jobs that seemed to have very high pay on them. Well, yes, come out here, come out west, we'll pay your way there, and you'll be making, you know, so much money every day. And then you get there, and the only place to live is the town the company built and owns and charges rent on. And the only place to buy food and what you need to live on is the company store. And the prices on the rent and the company store were always just a little bit higher than you were making. So what looked like this really good deal to get you out there was not a very good deal once you were there. And once you, you know, and the stores would be happy to extend your credit so that you could have whatever you needed. But once you owed money to that store, you were not allowed to leave the company town until you paid off your debt, which was, of course, kept impossible. Now, the company town became a very, very abusive form of corporate exploitation of the working classes. And it would have continued, except that the burgeoning union movement, of course, definitely took a stand against that. And there was also the socialist revolution that took place in the former Soviet Union. And the mere possibility of a socialist revolution in this country so terrified the American corporations that they pulled back from some of these more abusive practices of the company towns. Well, Soviet Union's gone. Everybody's a capitalist, unless you're living in one of the Muslim countries. And what we're seeing here in the United States is a return to the company town mentality, where no matter how hard you work and how much you earn, you're never allowed to get out of debt because everything you need to buy is always a little more than you're making. The place you're living in, the rent is always going to be, or the mortgage is going to be a little bit more and a little bit more than you're able to pay until you are so mired in debt you can't leave, you can't change your circumstance. You are effectively a slave. That's what they used to do in the company towns. And if you go back and you look at the folklore and the music of the time and understand it in the context of that form of debt enslavement, you'll see why they were singing the blues so much back then. And we're seeing it come, the entire United States is being turned into a giant company town. It's a company nation. And the person who is doing it to you right now is President Barack Obama, who is borrowing and borrowing trillions of dollars on your behalf from the Federal Reserve without your permission. In fact, in direct contradiction to your refusal to go on bailing out Wall Street. And he's just handing the money to all these ultra-rich people and putting you on the hook for it. And no matter how bad it gets, you get stuck with the bill. And the purpose of this, the end result of this, is going to be that every single American who is not an ultra-rich millionaire is going to have so much debt dropped on them, not even of their own making. They're borrowing this debt on your behalf without your permission and sticking you with it to turn you into a permanent, lifelong debt slave. We have our nation's first black president, and he's bringing slavery back to this country. Debt slavery for the people, involuntary servitude for our young people with his national service legislation. I mean, it's a direct violation of the 13th Amendment. I don't know how he thinks he's going to get it through, but obviously he thinks he will. And they're turning the United States into a giant company town, and this whole New World Order push, they want to do the same thing to the entire planet. There'll be a central bank that issues all the money and is happy to loan as much as you need. But the world is always going to be set up so that you can never pay it back. And you are on the hook for the entire time of your life. And then your children are on the hook, and their children inherit the debt. It'll be carried forward. And that is what we're watching right now. What Barack Obama has done. First of all, I don't think they should have bailed out the automakers to begin with. But once they did, I predicted we were going to reach this point where they were going to say, well, that was wrong. They can't pay it back. We're not going to give them any more. And guess who gets stuck with the debt? Somewhere between $9 and $12 trillion just over the last 6 months. More than we spend on all of our wars. And it's all on your little tab that they're keeping for you. And you have no choice. You will be given no choice whether or not to pay it back. When you are handed a debt and said, you will pay this, and you have no choice in the matter, that is slavery by any definition of the word. Remember what Malcolm X said? You have been bamboozled. You have been run amok. You have been flim-flammed. It's happened. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for Freak Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We've got a caller on the line. We're going to go to Drew in California. Aloha, Drew. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
How are you doing, Mike? I wanted to talk about the article that was posted, I think it was last night, the gun grabbers go into warp drive, that article that Lindsey Brown wrote.
Yes.
And I loved your commentary on it, but I wanted to point out something. Lily Brown told the truth in there. The one little line that maybe people didn't notice. Where was it here? Police departments are paramilitary organizations.
Mm-hmm.
That line hit me like a hammer. Because as I recall, the paramilitary translates roughly to civilian groups operating alongside or in place of regular military units. And military's job is to kill people and break things.
Yes. When it absolutely, positively has to be destroyed overnight, you call the U.S. Army.
Absolutely. And when the police want to take their places, and this is something for all of the 38 police listening, if your job is to kill people and break things and you're pointed at us,
mm-hmm.
you need to decide what is the right thing to do and make your own choices. But that line right there, yes, you know, we feel bad for the men who were killed and were probably not the ones not doing anything wrong. But police departments across the country need to clean their own houses because when the people are made the enemy, this is what happens.
Yeah, we're going to act like it. I mean, you know, all the stories I ran last week about the police who are, I mean, there's another one I was going to post today because I haven't gotten around to it, where these DEA people are literally going into these convenience stores in the neighborhood and they're searching for drugs. And while they're there, they're just putting stuff in their pocket. And walking out with it, we've heard about all these wrong dynamic entries that weren't even on the warrant, and people are getting killed with this whole situation. Yeah, when the police act like we're the enemy, we're going to react back like the enemy. The problem I had with Willie Brown's article is that he's calling for a ban on all assault guns, and here's where he's really messed up. California already bans that particular gun, and as a felon, the shooter wasn't supposed to have a gun anyway. So the real problem is that the laws that are already there aren't being enforced. But Willie doesn't say, let me finish my point here. Willie doesn't say, let's enforce the laws that we already have. He says, let's go for a new law that bans these guns for all law-abiding people. And then he makes this sweeping declaration that nobody has a right or nobody has a need for an AK-47 in their home. Well, I was in Los Angeles when the Rodney King riots happened. I saw the cops run like hell. I saw people trying to go to the gun stores to buy guns to defend their homes and businesses because the police had left, and they ran right into the waiting period. Meanwhile, of course, the rioters and the crooks either had guns or were simply stealing them from the abandoned police cars and the gun stores and wherever else they could get them. They were just stealing them. And I remember seeing a convenience store owner on the roof of the business into which he'd invested his entire life with a legally owned AK-47 keeping the rioters at bay when there wasn't a single police officer to be seen anywhere around. So Willie Brown has no business telling us that we don't have a need for self-defense and protection. And the bottom line is, when you read the Second Amendment very carefully, and it talks about the necessity of a free state, it is clear from that phrase that they're talking about military arms. The Second Amendment is not about hunting. It's not about target shooting. It is about reserving to the people as an individual right military arms of sufficient capability to hold a rogue government at bay. Go back to Lexington and Concord. What started the American Revolution was the British government coming in and saying the American people were not allowed to keep their own military arms. And that was really what started the battles of Lexington and Concord. Back when the Constitution was being written, hunting arms was just a given. You couldn't survive, especially through the winter, unless you had hunting weapons. When the French and Indian Wars were taking place, the American militia was at these forts as they fell to the French commanders would allow the militias to leave with their guns, because they understood that if they took the guns away, the people would starve. So the Second Amendment wasn't written about hunting weapons. That was a given. It was like a right that was beyond question and right that you had a right to hunting arms. The Second Amendment is about military arms, so that the people have a means to throw off abusive government like we have right now. Okay, your turn. I'm off my soapbox. My ammo box. I'm off my ammo box.
There you go. Yeah, it's, you know, the good news is that it seems like, from my own experience, it seems like even most of the police and state troopers I deal with are, you know, see, realize how ridiculous it is. I remember when I bought my H&K USP 45, I was in the gun shop, and there was a uniformed highway patrolman with his cruiser parked right out front, and he had been there. I was chatting with him a little bit. He'd been there three times that day because his letter wasn't perfect, as he was trying to pick up a .22 target pistol to teach his son how to shoot. Mm-hmm. And we were just joking about how it's a good thing these laws are keeping us safe from criminals like him.
Yes.
with a couple of phone calls between us, we could have easily gotten a crate of automatic weapons with no paperwork. And he was laughing because he goes, I guarantee I could do it with two phone calls.
Yes.
But it's just absolutely ridiculous to think, you know, really, you know, if another law was going to solve the problem, like, why don't they just pass a law against killing people?
I think there actually is one somewhere on the books. I've heard rumors to that effect.
I think there are a few of them, and strangely enough, they don't work.
No, they don't work because government likes there to be a certain amount of crime and violence going on in the streets, because then it makes us psychologically dependent on the government. This is why when there is a runaway mass shooting, well, like the nursing home one that's in the news right now, you're going to get a lot of play on it. But when you have somebody go on a mad shooting and he's stopped cold in his tracks by his private citizen with illegally owned firearms, it doesn't get the same news play. Because the government doesn't want you thinking in terms of the people being able to take care of and protect themselves, because then we don't need the government. I mean, right now a lot of people are saying, why do we need the government? If we're having to protect ourselves anyway, and they're just taking all of our money and they're not giving us good roads and bridges and flood control for it, you know, of what use is the government? They're just here to loot us and give it to Wall Street? You know, let's just send our money to Wall Street and cut out the middleman, and then we don't need the government, and it's, you know, obviously it's charging an overhead there. I mean, I'm being facetious here, but if you really think about the quality of your life and how much you're spending on taxation and what little you're getting back for it of any real tangible value, you have to ask, of what use is the government above the level of your state? Because the state's taking care of roads and a lot of your social stuff. The federal government, what is it doing besides making big shiny bombs and sending money to Israel and Pakistan and whoever else? What is it really doing that helps you?
Well, they're turning our schools into idiot factories. And
yeah, they're definitely doing that. Yeah. When local control of the curriculum went away, I mean, that was just an absolute disaster. We've had teachers here as a guest on the show, including one of our local teachers who actually had Obama in his class at one time. He said, yeah, this No Child Left Behind and all the tests they're imposing and all the standards they're imposing, it's destroying the ability to actually teach kids anything that relates to their local community and what they're going to do. Now they're coming up with this new law where students in schools aren't allowed to hug each other. Ooh, you'll get detention for that one. Okay, we got to take a break here. Drew, hang on. We're going to bring you back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're still talking with Drew in California. And, Drew, I kind of, like, talked over you this last segment. So what did you want to say here?
Oh, not too much. I mean, I want to make it clear. It's not a commentary on all of the police forces here. I mean, I'm a trucker. I deal with, you know, I see a lot of police in different cities and highway patrol here in California. And I know they go through a lot of stress and have a lot to deal with. And certainly when, you know, if the opportunity is there, I definitely make an effort to assist, whether it's, you know, pulling behind a cruiser who's, you know, who's pushing a car slowly up a hill to make sure he doesn't get hit, or to block if there's an accident on a blind turn. But, you know, again, it's something that is a choice that each individual officer needs to make for himself. Does he do what he's told, or does he do the right thing, whatever he thinks that may be?
Mm-hmm.
We're coming up on a point where, yeah, definitely, people are starting to realize that there's less and less need for government if we still have to do everything for ourselves, even the things that we pay them to do for us. You know, I was laughing listening to Mark Carnegie the other day. He was talking about a television broadcast that was up in Canada some years back, where it was an American reporter had told the Canadians that no, they were never going to be able to, you know, do an all-out ban on private ownership of firearms, because, and his friends at the Pentagon had confirmed this, in every scenario they've run, there's at least 58 million Americans who will never under any circumstances surrender any weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And any attempt to take them by force results in them losing, because again, once they open fire in an American city, all of their recruits dry up, all their equipment is what they have to work with, and they're not going to get any more. And whether it's by outlasting them, as has been the case in so many revolutions in the last 100 years, like Castro and like all the others, who simply waited the ruling powers out, marched in.
Mm-hmm.
Their victory, or the, you know, handful of grunts who actually know what's going on simply plug their officers and go home.
Well, as far as, and let me say something here, because I want to be very, very clear about this. I don't like violence. It's bad for tourism, and it's rough on the landscaping. I am convinced that we are coming up on a crisis in this country. I am hopeful that what we're going to see is the United States government to simply collapse from its own rot and corruption and bankruptcy the way the USSR did, and that it will all happen very quickly, and there'll be an absolute minimum of bloodshed, and then we'll have to get through a period of confusion while we come up with a new government that we want to take us into the future, and that's how that will be. As far as an actual revolution, if it should come to that, we don't have to outwait the government. All we, the people, have to do is collectively send a message to the rest of the world that we are not going to pay the bills anymore. I mean, going back to the SNL bailout of the 1980s, the U.S. government has managed to keep money parked in the United States economy, despite its lack of productivity in manufacturing, with the promise that whatever happens, the American people will cover any bad investments that will make up the losses. They demonstrated it during the SNL debacle in the 1980s. They're demonstrating it now. No matter how bad things get in the financial system, those wonderful American taxpayers are just going to work themselves to death for the rest of their lives to cover the losses. And that's very attractive to foreign moneyed interests. On the day when the American people stand up and say, no, I'm not going to pay this anymore, it has nothing to do with the quality of my life to go on giving half of everything I earn to a government so they can turn around and put it into foreign money center banks, which the reported is happening this morning. When that happens, the rest of the world is going to say, okay, time to move our money someplace else. They'll yank it out, and the whole system will come crashing down. And then we have to look around, and we need to start this right now. We need to decide what kind of a country we want to live in, coming out of the wreckage of the current government, and decide how best to implement that. Now, me, I'm a strict constitutionalist. I want to go back to the Constitution and the original 10 amendments and maybe a couple more of the ones after that, like the 13th. And as far as the later stuff, and certainly no Federal Reserve-type banking system, which is, you know, inevitably it has to ruin the economy of a country. What we're going through in the United States right now is what happened in ancient Rome. It's the same thing repeating all over again. And there's kind of like this saying we used to have around here, which is that they say a man cuts his wisdom teeth when he bites off more than he can chew. But that educational benefit is lost when the teeth that do the biting and the teeth that have to do the chewing aren't in the same mouth. And so what we have here in the United States is we have the teeth that did the biting were those bankers who set up the Federal Reserve System back in 1913. They're not even around anymore. They got their money. They had their wonderful elevated lifestyles living as demigods. And we, the American taxpayer, have had to do the chewing ever since. And it's not going to stop until we simply decide enough is enough and we just spit it out and say, okay, we're going to go to something else for a while. Because this whole Federal Reserve System, it was a scam from day one. Because the instant when you have a debt-based economy, the instant it goes into effect, more money is owed than is in existence. And so you have created an economic system that must be predatory simply to survive. It must be creating new crowds of borrowers. It must be working to hook more people onto debt, or it must be invading and conquering other people's wealth to satisfy the paperwork trail of the loans of that Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve system probably, ultimately, if you think about it, is a big factor in virtually every war we've had since its creation. Certainly we know that when Adolf Hitler created an alternative banking system and tried to go back to a unit of currency based on value, not debt, that's when the world's bankers just went totally nutso in 1933 and said, we declare war on Germany and we're going to boycott that German economy and we're going to bring it crashing down because we can't let the rest of the world see that this alternative banking system really does good things for the ordinary working people of Germany. Horrors, they might actually want that to come to the United States, and we cannot have that happen. So, you know, that's how that whole situation seems to be transpiring. But it's coming apart. We're in that hyperinflationary phase. It hasn't quite percolated yet down to the ordinary consumer, but it's coming. There is no question that it's coming. You know, when they're printing up trillions of dollars, you know, over the last 6 months and dumping it on the financial institutions, it's not like the money evaporates. It's still out there, and when you've got too much money chasing around too few goods and services, prices rise. That's the classic recipe for inflation. Okay, Drew?
Yes, sir.
Okay, is that it for today? Because we got another caller.
I think that'll do it. Enjoy your day.
All right, thanks an awful lot, Drew. Thank you for calling. Please call in again. We're going to switch to Frank in New York. And, Frank, we may run out of time, so I'm going to have to hold you over the commercial break to the final segment of today. But what is on your mind today?
Well, I disagree with your comment about the government, you know, sort of collapsing of its own volition, and then we'll have a rough period and we'll find a new government. That's not going to happen. And secondly, your comments about Hitler and the new bank or the new unit of currency based upon labor didn't exist until 1940-41. So he was in the pocket of the international bankers all the way through 1940. And
now, wait a minute.
Historically,
you need to go back and look at where the year that he was Time Magazine's Man of the Year, because the reason Time Magazine made him the Man of the Year was the financial economic turnaround that he engineered in Germany.
Right, and that was engineered by the banks on Wall Street, including Prescott Bush's Union Bank and also the illegal U.S. funding in violation of the Versailles Treaty, of German industry and different things. But Hitler was in the pocket of the bankers until 1940, and that's when the Germans changed the banking from a standard based on gold to one based upon labor, and that's what sort of finished him off. So I think you have to reread your history and look at that.
Well, you just
Hitler
said
was the puppet of the
Frank,
yes.
Okay, let me respond to what you said, because you just said it yourself. What Hitler did in the 1940s was take the monetary system from one based on gold to one based on labor. But before that, before it went on the gold system, it was based on a debt-based economy. Okay, Frank, we got to let you go. Frank, we got to let you go. Sorry about that. Okay, we're going to let Frank go here, and his perception is a little different than mine. But the reality is that a Federal Reserve-based system is bound to fail. We'll be back. And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show here today. And just to finish up on Frank's comments in the last segment, Time Magazine declared Hitler their Man of the Year for the year 1938, because of the turnaround in the German economy. So obviously this idea that Hitler's changes didn't have any effect until the 1940s is definitely not accurate. The bottom line is, at the Treaty of Versailles, a particular type of banking system was imposed on Germany that was based on the debt-based system, similar to the Federal Reserve, and it basically impoverished the German people while it made the bankers incredibly rich. And this was at a time when the German people were being expected to pay war reparations for World War I. What Hitler did was to get rid of the debt-based system, and very much like when John Kennedy tried to bring back the U.S. note, issue a currency based on a unit of value rather than borrowed from a central bank at interest. And that one change literally brought Germany back from the edge of ruin. And that was why Time magazine made Hitler their man of the year in 1938. And at that point, the seeds for war were set, because banking interests that operate on the debt-based system were terrified that if the rest of the world really understood just how Hitler had done it, they would demand that same banking system in their own homes. Right now, I think, sitting here in the United States of America, we can see for ourselves the disadvantages of the Federal Reserve system. When you go back, if you read the book Creature of Jekyll Island, and this whole idea that a private bank was given control of the money supply in the United States, because the Federal Reserve is not part of the government. It's no more federal than Federal Express. It's a private collection of banks that literally hijacked the American economy. They got Woodrow Wilson to sign the Federal Reserve Act as a price for his campaign donations to win the presidency. They literally railroaded the Federal Reserve Act through Congress over the Christmas break by walking into Congress, waiving the quorum rule so they didn't have to have a minimum number of congressmen, voice voted the Federal Reserve Act through, Wilson signed it. By the time everybody got back to Washington, D.C., it was a done deal. Later that same summer, Secretary of State Philander Knox possibly erroneously and fictitiously declared that the 16th Amendment authorizing a direct personal income tax had been ratified by the necessary number of states. That, too, is now in serious doubt. Like I said, we're a wiser people. We know, because of the lies about Saddam's nuclear bombs, that our government does lie to us about very important things, and the corporate media helps them to do it. So prudence demands that we question everything we've ever been taught to believe. Okay, now, we're going to finish up this show today with a couple of issues related to computers and computer networking. If you are one of the people who has been having difficulty reaching the What Really Happened website because you're using OpenDNS, that problem has been fixed. We're still trying to track down how it happened, but apparently somewhere between OpenDNS, mostly in Europe, and the domain registrar for our domain name, and the name servers, there was some kind of a blockage that got put in there. That has now been taken out and removed. We're trying to find out who put it in there. But we are now, I'm already getting emails from people saying, oh, all of a sudden I can see you again on OpenDNS. So if you've been having trouble reaching our websites, that problem seems to have been fixed. Now, continuing on this same subject, you have probably heard by now of the Conficker worm. This is a worm that has been floating around the Internet for quite some time. It has infected an estimated between 9 and 12 million computers. It is nasty enough that Microsoft has offered a $250,000 reward for any information leading to the arrest of the author or authors of the Conficker worm. And I stress the plural, because in its latest variant, Conficker C, it is showing a high degree of sophistication, suggesting that this is not the work of an individual, but the work of a very well-organized group of software engineers. In theory, this worm is hardwired to perform some kind of mischief on April Fool's Day. For some reason, April Fool's Day just seems to be a day of tremendous religious significance to computer hackers and other maladjusted social misfits with access to laptops and Internet connections. So is it possible that this is being overblown the way the Y2K bug was? Yeah, I'd say probably more than likely it's going to come and go without that much actually happening of any note. But obviously, you need to take some basic precautions. If you're on a Windows system, you can go to Microsoft and you can get the malicious software removal tool. It is absolutely free. You can put it on full scan, let it do its thing overnight, and just satisfy yourself that you do not have one of these infections. There's a bunch of other free tools available to deal with this. I've linked some of them to whatreallyhappened.com. And just do the basic moves. Like I said, this is probably going to turn out to be as much of a tempest in a teapot as Y2K, but, you know, doesn't hurt to be safe. And certainly in the case of the Microsoft malicious spyware tool, it will remove other things besides Configure that may have shown up on your system. Who knows? Could be a push to try and get you to panic buy all kinds of security software, but there are free tools out there. You should definitely be taking a look at those. So moving back to regular news then, as we watch Barack Obama talking about now we're going to have a supply route into Afghanistan through Tajikistan because of the difficulty with NATO supply depots being blown up in Pakistan. And we're just going through that whole back area and we're being assured that this is all non-military supplies and we're not going to be following militants into Pakistan from Afghanistan or into Tajikistan from Afghanistan. And for those of us who are old enough to remember, we heard the same song and dance during Vietnam. Oh, no, we're not going across the border into Cambodia, and we're not going across the border into Laos. And then, of course, after it all came out and the Pentagon Papers came out, we found out, yeah, we'd been all over the place there. We'd been bombing Cambodia, and we'd been incursions into Laos, and we still managed to completely bollocks up that situation, and basically we got our asses kicked out of the country at the very, very end. And for a president who campaigned on this continuous promise of pulling back these wars, and now he's just weasel wording this saying, well, yes, we're pulling out combat troops from Iraq, but we're renaming them as the Extended Training Support Auxiliary, whatever he's calling them this week. But it's the same thing. It's our kids in uniforms with guns standing in the desert breathing depleted uranium dust, the gift that keeps on giving. And it doesn't matter what you call them. It's still our kids standing in the desert being shot at or blown up. And it is not in any way, shape, or form consistent with Obama's campaign promises that he was going to end the war. And worse, it looks like he's getting ready to escalate things. As I understand the current budget, Obama has actually increased defense spending over what George Bush was doing. And that, too, is inconsistent with this idea of change that we can believe in, as in, let's come back home and take care of America and let the rest of the world worry about itself. Let Pakistan take care of itself. Let Iraq take care of itself. Let Afghanistan sort out its own problems. Let Israel take care of itself and its problems. Let's bring all of our kids home. Let's bring all of our money back home. Let's fix the United States of America because, folks, this country is broken. It is broken and it is broke. And I don't know who Barack Obama is listening to on those rare occasions where he actually stays in the Oval Office and he's not out in front of TV cameras somewhere. Maybe he's got one of those magic eight balls on his desk that he shakes it and he turns it over and he looks at the little blue window and it comes up and it says, bomb Afghanistan. Because it doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense what he's doing. In fact, everything he's doing is consistent with a president who thinks he's going to be the last guy to hold the job. And they're just going to loot the silverware from the White House, put it in their pocket, and just sneak off when the whole thing falls apart. Barack Obama has yet to do one thing consistent with the long-term economic health of this country. Remember a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about ending the tax loopholes that encourage corporations to send our jobs overseas. And I pointed out at the time that that sounded really good, but he wasn't talking about doing anything to encourage those jobs to come back. And sure enough, last Friday, we get an announcement from the Obama administration that they're not concerned about the American jobs that have already left the country because, after all, they're now low-paying jobs in those other countries. You just need to go out and find a new high-paying job to replace it. Where are we going to do that, Mr. President? Oh, well, that's not my problem. That's your problem. So, in other words, there's no change. We can't believe in this guy anymore. I mean, this is what? Beginning of April. He's blown the job. He's blown the honeymoon. It's really all over. All right, that's the end of our show. We're going to be back tomorrow, same time, 5 p.m. Central Time. Tell all your friends about the show. Tell all your local radio stations to carry us. Until tomorrow, stay safe. Be well. Hug your loved ones. Drive very carefully. A lot of crazy people out there. Aloha, America.